This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everyone. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, I hear we got another special speaker coming up today. Who have we got?
Yes. Today we are going to be speaking with a truly remarkable and accomplished person, Greg. We are speaking with Ellie Kay. Ellie Kay is the best-selling author of 15 books, including Lean Body, Fat Wallet, and Heroes at Home. She is a Toastmasters International accredited speaker, as well as a popular international speaker and media veteran who has given over 1,800 media interviews, including appearances on ABC, CNBC, CNN, and Fox News. As a popular columnist, she writes for 6 national magazines, has been a subject matter expert for The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and Washington Post. Currently, Ellie provides financial education to military members through her Heroes at Home financial event, sponsored for USAA. Ellie is married to Lieutenant Colonel Bob Kay, and they have 7 children. Ellie Kay, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's really great to be with you guys today.
Great to have you with us, Ellie. I have to share with you, Ellie, I was reviewing your bio and your CV, and I was a bit conflicted. On the one hand, I felt inspired. I felt like I could go out and conquer the world. But then I started thinking about my own list of accomplishments and looking at yours, 15 books, 1,800 media interviews, 20,000 volunteer hours, 7 kids, no less. And I felt like I just wanted to crawl up in a ball on the floor and suck my thumb.
Yes, so, but you know what? You have that I don't have. I don't have my very own podcast.
Oh, we'll take it. Absolutely.
That's one for you, Ryan.
Yeah. So I got to ask you, Ellie, and obviously we'll get to some of your background and whatnot, but how do you do it all? How do you fit in all of these responsibilities? And apparently you're able to be very successful in many areas. What's your secret?
Well, I believe that we can have it all. We just can't have it all at the same time. And so I've always sought to prioritize different aspects of my life and really maintain that work-life balance in a very proactive way. What that translates to is that when my kids were little and they would nap, that's when I would write books during that limited time. And then to finish up a deadline, I may have to go away for the weekend and drop all those kids on my fighter pilot husband, which he just loved doing, and try to make those things work. So I think it's about priorities. It is about what's important to you. And the work that I do, whether it's raising up a family that's going to make a difference in our communities around the world, or whether it's speaking to an audience that can help them improve the quality of their life, no matter what it is, I think it's important to prioritize those things that are your passion.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's kind of go back to the beginning for you here, Ellie. I know recently you received the accredited speaker designation, but obviously that didn't happen in a bubble, in a vacuum. Your process of beginning to speak started long ago. So could you bring us back and tell us your career background and then how you got started as a speaker and presenter?
It is a little bit interesting because I was always a very shy little girl. And yet when I stood on a stage, I became a different person. And so I started speaking about 25 years ago. I started small. I was consistent. I spoke to a lot of different groups. Sometimes there were only 8 to 10, 12 people there. And I began to teach on things that were important to the communities in which I instructed. In other words, I actually started as one of the original coupon queens. And I would, believe it or not, my early media pictures, I was wearing a crown for coupon queen. And
nice.
Now I've transcended that in the last many years, 2 decades, and I've become America's family financial expert and America's military family expert. So I kind of started off in a certain area and in a certain way, and then I kept working at it, and it eventually evolved into what it is today.
You mentioned the financial education and financial education to the military members. What does that involve? How is that different than regular education?
I have 2 main spheres of influence. I'm branded as America's family financial expert, and so I will go on television. I'll help major Fortune 500 companies such as Walmart or Sears or Visa, American Express, I'll help these companies launch new products on television and on radio. And so that's one area in which I work, a space in which I operate. The other space is military families, and I will help them with their quality of life, with dealing with separations, with dealing with operations tempo, in looking at how do you stay connected when you're apart from your loved one, things like that. And so that's branded as America's Military Family Expert. And where the two worlds collide is the real sweet spot for me. And that is what Heroes at Home was about in the message that I presented. And that's military finance. And so when I go out to bases to speak to them, I give the inspirational military piece, but then I also drill it down into military finance, what their particular kind of retirement looks like, what their benefits are, how to read their leave and earning statements. So things that are military centric in regards to finances.
Tell us a little bit about sort of the season of life that you're in right now as a speaker and presenter. How old are your kids now? How often are you out on the road or doing media interviews? When you do media interviews, are you going into a city somewhere, or is that something you do from home through Skype? I know I rolled a lot of questions in there, but have at it.
Well, sure. Well, thank you. I appreciate the question. The area of life that I'm in right now, the season of life, is that we've raised all of our young adult children. They're millennials. I actually have two stepdaughters in those seven children, and they range from 35 down to 21. The last five, I only gave birth to five children is what I like to say. That's all I did. But we raised all of our kids. They're graduating from college debt-free. All of them have at least bachelor's, if not a master's degree. And they're self-sufficient out in the world, making it a better place. Three of those children are military members. We have a Marine that is currently stationed overseas in harm's way. We will be coming home soon, and we're looking forward to that. We have an Air Force pilot that is going through pilot training. And then the youngest is really confused because he went into the Army via West Point. So he'll graduate as a second lieutenant in a couple more years. So that's kind of where we're at. Now, I minimize my travel to 2 to 3 times a month because my marriage is still really important to me. I like to spend time with my husband and that kind of thing. So we're also in the season where we're starting to have grandchildren, and that is a real delight as well.
It sounds like you now have some extra time for your Toastmasters journey. Tell us a little bit about your journey to become an accredited speaker.
As I look back on my journey, it is kind of interesting when I compare it to other people. And, you know, at the top of this segment, you were talking about comparing yourself to me. And one of the things that I tell my kids and I tell other people that I coach and mentor in regards to speaking is that you have to run your own race. And when you start to compare yourself with other people, one of two things is going to happen. You're either going to stack up ahead of them and then you get prideful, or you're going to come in behind them and then you get feeling as if you're not as much. And so I think that it's important to just concentrate on our journey, where we're at, and make the most of that. Now, when it comes to accredited speaker, this time last year, I was competing in the evaluation contest for District 33 and was sitting by a former international president of Toastmasters, Mike Notaro. He's in the Coast Guard. We were talking about our military connection. And he mentioned to me this whole concept of the accredited speaker, which I had not really heard about because I've only been a Toastmaster for about 3 years. And then when he started describing it, he looked me right in the eye and he said, you know, you ought to go for this. So I had only about 2 months when I started putting my package together to get it submitted on time. And it's quite an extensive package. The video aspect of it is very specific. Most people don't pass their first level of accredited speaker because they didn't follow the directions when it comes to submitting their package, including the very specifics that you have to follow in regards to the video that you're submitting. So I submitted all of that. And then next thing I knew, I was in the finals. What I basically did was I do what I do all the time. And I also set it up in a unique way. I made sure in the introduction that the judges, that the audience knew that they were not an audience of international Toastmasters. For the purposes of that presentation, they were a group of military members and their families. And I think that made a huge difference when it came to that presentation.
So you just gave this presentation in August in Las Vegas, Nevada. Is that right?
That is correct.
And obviously, you made the cut as you're a newly minted accredited speaker. What does that mean to be an accredited speaker? For those who aren't familiar with that program or with the designation.
Well, the designation is reserved for 0.5% of all Toastmasters worldwide. It is quite an incredible designation. It's very exclusive. It's very difficult to get. In recent years, they have made the criteria more stringent than they have in the past, because I believe that Toastmasters is wanting to keep that designation as something that is highly coveted, that is very exclusive, and is something that really means something. So it means a lot to me to get that designation, even though I didn't know what it was this time last year. It's still something that is quite an accomplishment. I was very thankful that at least one of my children and my husband were able to be in the audience when that happened, because I was able to share that moment with them. And it was truly a highlight of my speaking career.
Nice. Now, you mentioned that you joined Toastmasters about 3 years ago. I know that now you're president of your Toastmasters club. You're also serving as an area director. Can you take us back to how you first joined Toastmasters, how you got introduced to the program, and tell us also a little bit about your role as club president and area director today?
I joined Toastmasters because I wanted to spend more time with a friend of mine, and she is a mother of eight. She homeschools, and she's very busy. So she said, why don't you come with me every week to Toastmasters? And that's one place that we can hang out together and spend time together. And so I joined for that purpose. And then as a professional speaker, people kind of said, why are you here? What are you doing here? You don't really need to develop as a speaker. And I realized two things. I went to Toastmasters originally, even though I went to hang out with a girlfriend, I went for two purposes. Number one, to try out new material, because I want to keep my material fresh. Yes, I speak about 100 times a year, every single year, and I have for the last 25 years, although in the early years I wasn't speaking as much as I am now. And so I do speak a lot professionally, but I want to keep it fresh with new material. So when I try out something new to my club and they don't laugh, then it's not funny. It really isn't. And so I'd rather fail or bomb with a joke that just does not work. It's funny to me, but it's not funny to anybody else, in front of 25 people than I do in front of 2,500 people. And so that's one of the reasons I go. The second reason is I discovered that I really have a passion to mentor speakers who want to go up to the next level, primarily speakers that are going from good to great. And as an evaluator, I actually did win the district last year. I found I had a knack for evaluating. I can help people get from that point, that tipping point for them, whether they're going to go into become a professional speaker. And now as an accredited speaker, I can continue that and even mentor people that have a desire to become an accredited speaker.
Awesome.
I was going to say, amen. I find that it's great to hear someone like yourself saying that, because one of the things you try to impress upon people, sometimes they finish their CC, competent communicator, in a year, year and a half, and they figure they're done. They don't realize that Toastmasters is a place where you never stop learning. And the other thing I discovered you just mentioned is that quite often people join Toastmasters for one reason and they stay for another reason.
That's true. You know, Ryan and Greg, I really appreciate you guys and the podcast that you have, because it explores so many different aspects of Toastmasters. And in growing, it is something that is vital to us. I think you can always become better at what you're doing. Yes, I'm one of those people that has put in my 10,000 hours. They say that it takes that much time investment to really become a master of your craft, whether you're playing a violin or whether you're standing on a stage speaking. And yes, I've done that. And yet, good enough in some cases is not good enough, because I'm always giving new speeches. Those speeches are not yet perfected. And so those are things that I'm trying to get better at when it comes to sharing them with my home club. Another thing that I do is I tell stories. I try to connect with my audience in two ways every time I speak. And that is, I try to make them laugh and I try to bring them to tears if it's a speech that is set up to that. So I want to connect with them on a deeper level emotionally. So when I'm sharing a story that is particularly poignant, if there's at least one gal in my Toastmasters club that doesn't tear up because she tears up at everything, then that story's not connecting and it's not as poignant as I think that it is. So I think that there's always room for improvement. And the day I'm stopped growing is the day that I'm going to be 8 feet under, because I want to continue growing the rest of my life.
Wow.
It's a good approach to have. You know, I wonder, Ellie, if the dynamic with your club will change at all over time. And I guess what I mean by that is, in terms of using your material, trying it out on your home club, I've found I belong to a couple of Toastmasters clubs, and one that I've belonged to for, I don't know, a good probably 10 years or so. The members there know me really well. They know my sense of humor. So when maybe I say a joke that's a little bit off the wall, they kind of have some context. That, I guess that's the word I'm getting at. They have context for knowing who I am and what I'm saying. And so I think that material might work there. Whereas another club I belong to that's a new club that just started, I didn't know anyone in the club before I joined. They don't have that context with me yet. And I'm just thinking of my own situation, but also thinking of yours. You have the context of your Toastmasters club, but also you have the context of being introduced, let's say, as a keynote speaker, where people are already kind of ready to laugh, ready to be amazed, so to speak. I guess I'm just wondering your thoughts on how material plays with different audiences based on the context that you have with them and they have with you.
Well, I think your point is well taken. And I think that developing a rapport with your audience, whether you're fresh and they've never seen you before because you're at a new event and they don't know who this LEK person is, or whether it's your home club and they love you. I mean, my club, they care about my Marine on deployment as much as my family members do. I mean, we are really a close, tight, bonded club, and they are like family to me. And so there's a different dynamic that exists in this relationship that I have with my audience. And I feel that as speakers, that's how we need to look at presentations, as a relationship with your audience. In some cases, it may be a tenuous relationship. I have had hostile audiences. I'll never forget the time that a president's wife was supposed to come and speak at an event that I was at, and she had to cancel at the last minute because the Secret Service could not guarantee her safety in Shamu Atorium in SeaWorld down in San Antonio. So I had a hostile audience. Number one, they wanted to hear this president's wife, and they got this LEK person, you know, that is not presidential. Number two, the show wasn't going to start until I was finished speaking. And so I kept getting upstage by this whale, you know, that would go behind me in the audience. It was a tough crowd, you know. I didn't really have a great rapport with that audience. And so that relationship was a short relationship. I was supposed to talk 20 minutes, and every time I talked, it was the worst dynamics acoustics. I mean, I realized this is crazy. So I cut it short. Everyone was happy with me cutting it short. I fulfilled my responsibility. They got to see Shamu, and everything was great. We have these different relationships with our audience. And then I have relationships with new audiences, but they're military. They know I'm a military spouse of 28 years. They know that I currently have 3 children in the military. So there's this natural bond. They're my people. There's an affinity there. So I think that it is important to know your audience. That's one great thing that Toastmaster does for us, is it teaches us to analyze our audience, to know our audience, so that we'll know how to connect with them. We do our work ahead of time, but then we're extremely sensitive once we get up on the platform and we're looking at our audience, and you've got to read them. If they're not with you, you need to shift gears so that you can try to draw them in another way. And that's one of the things that I find to be a challenge, but I also find it to be very rewarding when that audience does turn and now you're on the same team and you have a good relationship going on with them.
What I found was that your Heroes at Home presentation, even though it was specifically directed to a military audience and a military family audience, that there were a number of messages that I thought were universal. And in fact, there's 2 things I was wondering if you wanted to comment on. One of them, in your presentation, you had mentioned how one needs to differentiate passion from profession. Can you explain that a little bit, please?
Well, yes. When it comes to the whole idea of our profession, that's something that I do for a living. I mean, I enjoy my work. I enjoy launching new products for Fortune 500 companies. I enjoy speaking at arena events about finances on a civilian level to 8,000 screaming crazy women that are selling premier jewelry. I mean, I love that. That's really great. And yet, that's my profession. That's what I do for a living. But my passion, my heart, is helping military families. They are my people. They make sacrifices that we hear about and we have an intellectual acknowledgement of what those sacrifices are. But having lived it, having seen it, and having gone through it on a regular basis, I love these people and I want to help them be able to feel valued. I want them to feel affirmed and I want them to feel confident that that job that they have to do as a military member or a military family member, they can do that with the right tools, with the right characteristics, if they will develop those, and that that work is a life and death work that will help freedom, literally, around the world. So that's my passion.
Wow. You also mentioned about doing your part to save lives halfway around the world and how distractions can lead to accidents. I found that very powerful.
It's powerful because it's true. You see, when a military member is in harm's way, they are in a variety of situations. When my Marine went to Afghanistan last year, he was in firefights every single week. They had air assault missions where they had to jump on a helicopter and get the heck out of there while they're being shot at. I mean, these are some pretty intense situations, and they have to be focused. If they're worried about a family member that's back home that is spilling all kinds of bilge and negativity on Facebook or Snapchat or Twitter or something else that a military member may have access to, or they're talking to their military member and they're wringing their hands and saying, I just can't do this. I don't like this. I want you to come home. Well, there's nothing that military member can do about it. And if they're worried about that family member, then that can lead to a distraction. And a distraction in that case, when you're in harm's way, that leads to a loss of life. And that's why I tell military families that the best thing that they can do for their military member while they're separated from them is to tell them, I love you, I'm proud of you, and I'm going to be all right. And when they do that, then that military member can concentrate on their job. And then when they come home, all bets are off. You know, for the wife, she hands over the baby with the poopy diaper, and that military member, you know, he gets to change the diapers and she goes for a mani-pedi. I mean, it's not like they're living like this all the time, but they're living like this when the stakes are very high, and those stakes are life and death.
Absolutely.
Wow. I think I can sense that passion that you were referring to. It's coming through. It's palpable here on the podcast.
After listening to the presentation, I kept focusing in on the distractions can lead to accidents. And I think if more people can take that to heart, then maybe they'd actually stop texting and driving at the same time.
Oh.
No, seriously. I mean,
no, I'm not kidding. I agree with you. Totally.
Ryan?
Yes. Oh, sorry. I was texting. Texting and podcasting. Ellie, I really want to ask you, what has been the role of rejection in this process for you? I think it's easy to look at your list of accomplishments and think, oh, this is just one of those unique women who everything she touches turns to gold. But I'm sure that's not the full story. So tell us how rejection has played a role in the process of going from where you started from to where you are today.
That's a great question. And I don't really think I've ever had that question before in the 1800 interviews that I've had. So that's very insightful. And I really love this question. I was actually raised in a very dysfunctional home, and I suffered rejection from a very young age and grew up in an abusive environment. I rose above that, above what my siblings did, who had troubles legally, and neither one ever graduated from high school and so forth. And so I took that rejection that I had as a very young child, and I turned it around into something more, to a greater purpose. I actually have a relationship with God, and I felt like from the age of 7 that I had a purpose and a call on my life, and that life was to help other people. I started giving money away when I was really young. I was an entrepreneur from the age of 7, had my own business, and started supporting poor children in third world countries. So that all started from an environment of rejection. Now, when you fast forward and you look at my career, 20 years ago when I first started out, I heard no 19 out of 20 times. But I kept knocking on doors, I kept trying, and I kept persevering. And now I am so-called successful, quote unquote, but I still hear no 9 out of 10 times. So I think that the difference between people that succeed, whether it's the accredited speaker or whether it's raising up a family that's going to make a difference in the world, no matter how you define success, I think that the difference between those who succeed and those who fail are those who continue to try in the face of rejection, believing that eventually one of those doors is going to open up, and it's going to be sweet when that happens.
Nice. Ellie, so much good stuff here in our discussion today. I really appreciate you spending the time to share with us your experiences and your insights. Where can folks go to learn more about Ellie Kay?
They can go to my website, elliekay.com. That's ELLIEKAY.com. They can also go to the Accredited Speakers website or even to Toastmasters.org. And I have bios posted in all of those places as well. There's also a list on my website of places that I'll be speaking in the future. We're building our global tour right now, speaking at different military bases around the world for this next year. And all of that can be found at my website at elliekay.com.
Ellie Kay, it's been an honor and a pleasure having you on our show.
Well, thank you guys so much. I can't wait to add this podcast to my resume. It's going to be right at the very top. And you guys have been delightful hosts, and keep up the good work.
Our pleasure.
Thanks so much, Ellie.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.